ranked one of America's top research universities, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries on UWM today. Here's the host, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor of University Relations.
We're all getting older with every birthday that we celebrate, but we don't all age the same way. And how we approach aging affects not only us, but the people around us. On this edition of UWM Today, we're talking to a UWM English professor who's just published a book about getting older. Drawing material from scientific research, film, literature, and even works of art, Alan Lem's new book is titled Gray Matters, Finding Meaning in the Stories of Later Life. Welcome, Alan. It's great to have you on today's program.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
You know, I've read some excerpts from the book, and I found it really a fascinating collection of stories about how we age. And we're going to talk in detail about some of your findings, but I saw that there was a really interesting story about how you decided to write the book in the first place.
Yes, thank you. It's interesting that I have a lot of 80-year-olds in my life, a lot of relatives. And so my mom in particular, who lives here in Waukesha, would ask a lot of questions that I had no answers to. And I felt really ignorant and ill-informed. So she would be like, is this the best long-term care policy? Should I go ahead and have the knee surgery? What about the cataract surgery? And I just kept saying, I don't know. And I'm not used to that. I'm a professor. I usually have answers. And I kept saying, I don't know. I don't know. And then I thought to myself, I'm really ill-equipped to be an advisor to somebody who's in their 80s. So I thought that was interesting. And I thought, well, maybe I'll go look and see what books are out there about the subject of aging. And I went to my local Barnes & Noble and found the tiniest little shelf. And it's funny because it's buried amid a huge wall of books on child rearing. So there's like, you know, hundreds of books on how to raise children and like nothing about, you know, how adults and their adult children in aging relate to each other. So that's what I think that was my first kernel of interest in the topic.
Yeah, it's as if we're all expected just sort of figure it out by ourselves.
Exactly. And I just thought, why do we think that there's so much knowledge about the beginning of life and so little knowledge about the end of life? And in the tiny little aging section that they had, 3/4 of them were about dying. So I thought, wait, what about the living part of old age? And so it really, I mean, and now there have been more books that have come out, and I think people are catching on. But when I first started the project a couple of years ago, there really was a shortage of information that helped prompt me to do something about that and start investigating it myself.
Well, in your research, you came across the typical stereotypes that we hear about getting older, right? I mean, how many of us want to wake up in the morning and say, great, I'm another day older, and I'm another day closer to the end? We don't live that way. And yet, if you look at much of the culture around us, the celebration is not on getting older, but on staying young.
Right. And I really think that was what struck me about writing the book, is that how many people have a very negative view about being old? I mean, it's almost never used in a positive way, where it is in other cultures. I went to the Botanical Gardens in Chicago recently, and I saw that they had a plant that they actually cut in a way to make it look old. It was in the Japanese gardens there, and it was a young plant, but they make it look old. And the sign said, because in Asian cultures, to be old is to actually be given status. And I thought, that's not our take here in the United States. And I wanted to figure out why there's so many negative associations with aging. And so I did find out, and I hopefully in the book overturn some of those.
Well, let's talk about some of those stereotypes. What's right and what's wrong about the way we look at getting older?
Right. Well, I think, there is the idea of the grumpy old man, which was actually the name of a film. So, you put something as the name of the film, it's going to stick. And I think one of the things that about that stereotype is that maybe people are more honest when they're older, that that research does show that people are less about people pleasing and like making others happy. And so maybe honesty, it doesn't necessarily mean grumpy, but it's just maybe people being more their true selves and their real selves. So that's one of the stereotypes that gets talked about a little bit in the book and that I thought was interesting and needed to be overturned.
And what about being honest? One of the things in your book that I found fascinating was going back and seeing how you synthesized or blended the way in which we view aging. In literature, for example, you talk about King Lear and Shakespeare's take on aging.
Yes. I mean, I think that there are great sources of inspiration to learn about aging through literature, and King Lear is one of them. It's about somebody who sort of lost his perspective as he was getting older because he was being counseled by other people and not really trusting his own instincts. And I think the part from Lear that interested me was the relationship between his children and himself as he aged. And that was became a chapter in the book because so many people my age, I'm in my 50s, talk a lot about their relationships with their parents, but you don't hear a lot of people talking about that in the literature. It is in fiction and in films, but I really thought this is worth talking about. Some of the things that were touched on were the role reversals of children, adult children having to now be somewhat more responsible for their parents. And I thought one interesting revelation that came up for me in that chapter was that adult children are worried about their safety of their parents a lot. And so they're concerned about safety, whereas the older people themselves are more worried about autonomy, of staying independent. And so you can see how there would be conflicts if the children are, oh no, and that's come up even with the coronavirus, where I've seen articles on my 80-year-old mom is socializing with a friend. I'm worried about, her safety. And, probably that 87-year-old, that mom is thinking, I want to be able to have my decisions be respected. I know about the virus too, and it is my autonomous decision. So when I came across that revelation, it helped explain a lot of the conflicts that do come up when people are at cross purposes, one thinking, I just want to keep you safe, and the other person thinking, I just want to make my own decisions for myself. Thank you very much.
What I really like in your book is that you point out that the reactions that we have in those conversations with our parents are actually universal, right? I mean, we're not alone. And yet, as we are growing older and we look at the relationship we have with our parents, it can often seem like we're the only ones who are feeling the way that we feel.
Yeah. And that's what I said. I mean, I really cannot believe that there is not more looking at this rich, vast literature and this part that is part of people's daily experiences. What happens when an older person is moving and they have all these possessions and they want to give them to their adult children who already have houses that are filled with material? What do you do? And what do you do when someone hasn't sorted through a lot of their belongings for a long time? And again, their people are at different cross purposes where the adult child might be, let's get rid of things. And the other person's like, this is my life. These are my memories. You know, how do I get rid of my memories? So many interesting issues. And I do have to say of my different chapters, that one is probably like closest to my heart a little bit, you know, because I live that chapter every day.
Yeah, you see the eyeballs rolling in your kid's head as they try to gently tell you, no, we really don't want your crap, mom and dad. We have our own, right?
Exactly.
As you talk about the different way in which we here in America view aging compared to other societies. Here in the U.S., has our thinking about aging evolved over the decades that we've been a country? We're a lot younger than a lot of other countries. Is it unusual for us to have such a amazing laser focus on celebrating the young and perhaps not appreciating the old?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And, you know, I think I do bring in a little bit of anthropological research, looking at other cultures a little bit, but I think probably people who are scholars in that could do more so. I don't think we've made a lot of progress in just valorizing the young and shunning sort of everything associated with old. I don't see a lot. I mean, I think maybe in some of the icons in film and television who are still able to find work. I mean, there's better cultural media that shows multifaceted components of aging. So for example, like the Comiskey method that I mentioned as a TV show on Netflix, and Grace and Frankie. So I think maybe our culture is getting better about showing aging in its multifaceted components away from the stereotypes. But I still think that the general population could have a better attitude. I still feel as if, I mean, I was teaching yesterday and I'm co-teaching with a history professor and we're teaching in this big amphitheater because for social distancing and there's a lot of stairs. And so, you know, there were a couple references to like, oh, I feel so old, you know, because of having to go up and down the stairs and neither of us could read the big, could read what was on the screen. And it still is almost never used positively. It's usually used in a kind of a negative sense. And so I feel like that can change, or someone could say like, I feel old. And, you know, I would love to have that be filled with new meaning.
When my wife and I have those moments, I always say, it's just a number, honey. It's just a number. Right. And lately she's not been buying that.
Right. And, you know, and I definitely don't want to be in the book, and I hope I wasn't disregarding that there are some struggles that happen as people get older. I mean, the body does, you know, have all kinds of ways that it can go wrong. There are, you know, I talk about dementia. There are ways in which, you know, people have real struggles. But I just don't feel that necessarily it means doom and gloom, that the end is near, that people have challenges, but they also have found really incredible ways of acceptance and resilience of those challenges. And, you know, I bring in the research that is international and worldwide, that people are happier later on in life, that there is that U-turn, very happy at the beginning of their lives, deep down into their 50s where I supposedly am, and then it starts going up. And I think the happiest people are in their like late 90s or 100. I think that's reassuring to hear that there's a balance, that it's not necessarily going to be a smooth ride into the later years, but there are going to be some ways that people feel very satisfied as well when they get there.
And I suppose we also have to remind ourselves that we're, in a sense, breaking some new ground, because as a result of great healthcare systems and medications that never existed before, the likelihood of us living as long as people are now is so much greater today than it was for our parents or our grandparents.
Absolutely. And yeah, I think that was one of the facts that I came across that really struck me was there's so much more time that adult children will have with their older parents than in past generations. It used to be have those 18 years together living in the home. And then, you know, later on in years, it might been, you know, a decade or you know, two, but now there's, you know, can be 30 or 40 years that people will be with their adult parents. So that relationship really grows. And yeah, I do think that that's a significant fact that a longer time on the planet brings up a lot more issues.
And more opportunities to deal with those issues, right?
Exactly.
You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. Good to have you with us this week. I'm Tom Lujack, and joining us on this week's program is Ellen Lem. Ellen is a professor of English and coordinator of the Honors Program at UWM's College of General Studies, part of our two-year campus satellite programs in Waukesha and Washington County. You know, just a great addition to the UWM family. Ellen's new book is called Gray Matters, Finding Meaning in the Stories of Later Life. There's one excerpt in your book, Ellen, where you take a look at film and the way in which aging is portrayed in film. And I'd like you to, if you would, just relate the Sam Elliott film that that you reference that really struck me as being especially meaningful.
Okay, and he is in a lot of films, so I just wanted to make sure. Probably the one where his relationship with his adult children.
With his kids, right.
Yeah, and I think that that one is significant, and it really resonates with a lot of people, where he was played a kind of a Western actor and who never had a lot of time for his family when he was working on his career. And now that he's sort of towards the end of his life, he wants to have a relationship with his daughter who says, what? Why should I? Why should I give you the time when you never gave it to me? And it really brings up issues about whether or not the relationship that people have later on in life, whether it should be signified by what came before, or do you have an opportunity to decide to make a choice to take back a parent who was never perhaps the ideal parent to you. So I thought it was really interesting that some people want it to be reciprocal. You were not a good parent to me. I am not going to be a good adult child to you later on in life. And that for other people, they find it in their heart to have a new relationship because the parent has changed, you know. And so if we're all evolving, then, you know, do we give that person a chance? Or in some cases, even if the person hasn't evolved, do we just decide to be a good person and be a kind person and take that parent back in? So, yeah, I did think that that was a kind of a fascinating movie. And I also mentioned Trainwreck with Amy Schumer. And I thought that movie was interesting because there are two sisters and they have a very different relationship of the father, where one, and they have to make decisions about his assisted living. And one says, I don't care where he goes, like, you know, put him in the alley. And the other one is like, oh no, but it was our dad. And I think that is really a powerful reminder that people can grow up in the same household and have a very different perception of the relationships with family members.
And the fact that we can use film or literature as a guide for helping us figure things out, because it again reminds us that there were people before us who were dealing with these same issues that suddenly appear in our lives when, you know, perhaps we thought we would somehow be exempted, right? You know, it'll be smooth sailing in our lives, but it rarely is that true.
Right. And that's why I really was happy to include a lot of film, and even because now television is of such a high quality, it's almost, you know, on par of kind of the great classic films in the past. But yeah, we do see other people wrestling with these same issues. In the chapter on housing, I talk about a Grace and Frankie episode where their children, thinking they need to be safe, say it's time for assisted living for you two, and you see how they don't, it doesn't really work for them in some ways. And so seeing that in television is a reminder that, maybe I'm watching this as an adult child. Oh, maybe I am jumping the gun a little bit and thinking, you know, sending my parents off to some kind of assisted living. And then older people watching it can see, on the other hand, like, wait, I really need to advocate for myself because, you know, I don't want to make the same mistake. So I do like that film, television, literature, we get to see multiple roles and we get to see things from different perspectives. And I think that really helps give a fuller picture in understanding our own lives.
Well, in addition to drawing from the arts, you also took a look at a lot of the surveys that have been done of aging adults. Some of the responses that you included were humorous, insightful when people were asked, so what makes you happy? What advice would you give people who are young today about how to grow old better? What did you hear in that research?
Oh, so those were fascinating. And that was really an important part of the book. So this was those were my surveys that I sent out to people, and 25 questions. And I learned so much from the surveys and I wanted to integrate a lot. So some of the things about what would you tell your 20-year-old self? One of the ones that really resonated for me was to slow down. I think when I read that one, it was on a particularly crazy day where I'm just so busy, I'm not able to do what I need to do. And just this reminder about slow down, you know, it's not a race. That was really helpful. There was a lot about marriage partners, about on both ends, some saying, don't be so picky about it. Other people saying, I should have waited longer. Advice about that. Let's see. There was so much that I took from them. I really liked also on the question about work, people who, there was an architect who was in his 80s and he's like, why would I stop working? I'm at the top of my game. I've never been better. And so I think that that's important because a lot of people will be like, oh, I'm in my 60s. So I probably should start thinking about that. But a lot of the research I came across with retirement was not, and in surveys, was not good, in terms of increased substance abuse, higher suicide, and just a lot of negative aspects. And then a survey response that stood out to me on the retirement was, people don't think I'm interesting anymore. Nobody asked. It used to be tell me what's going on with work. And now people don't ask me questions. And I thought that was really startling. But I also didn't want to just sort of damn retirement because so in looking at the movie about Schmidt, I recognize that retirement does offer people the possibilities of living a new life, of starting over in some ways. And so I think that we should be aware of that there are some psychological components that can be negative about retirement. But there are also some possibilities. So I hopefully in the work chapter, I got both of those viewpoints across.
You know, as I was reading parts of the book, it occurred to me that although it is about getting older, in many respects, the book, I think, could be a more useful tool for someone who's not old at all, who still has age or the senior status somewhere down the road, because there were some wonderful, wonderful life lessons that older folks were sharing, as you just mentioned.
Yeah, I think so too. And I'm really happy to hear you mention that, because I really want this book to be for people at all different stages in life. And what I think a person who is younger could take in that section with the adult parents, for example, there were people in the surveys who said, I wish that I had parented differently. I wish that I had not been so consumed with my career. I wish I had spent more time with my children. And so people who are reading this in parenting ages and feeling as if, they must put all their energy into their careers, you know, it's a reminder that late in life, what will they have regrets about this or not? And so I think that was one of the areas. But then also, you know, I talk a lot about it. There's a chapter on gender with women, and, women are much poorer later on in life. And it oftentimes is a result of their choices earlier, taking time out from work when they had children. It gives them less social security. It takes away opportunities for advancement. So anyway, I think that there are some ways that people can learn about what they might be wanting to do in middle age or younger in life that will be helpful later on.
You talked about how frantic your life can be. And sometimes, you know, you too have to just stop and give pause to what you're doing. Are there any other big lessons that you've learned in researching this book that might shape the decisions that you're going to make 10 years from now or 20 years from now as you're older?
I think in general, I really do not have a negative view of aging. And I don't know that I had a particularly bad one to begin, but I don't think it was positive. I'm now much more curious to hear about people's stories. I go once or twice a week to a water Tai Chi class where I am one of the younger people in it at the YMCA. And in the past, someone might have thought like, oh my goodness, I'm the youngest person in here. But instead I see, wow, I'm in this pool with a bunch of treasure troves of stories, you know? So a woman recently told me her name was Doris, and she's in her 90s. And I got her connected with the Wisconsin Historical Society because she was an early dental assistant who worked with fluoride. She was an alternate for the Olympics and, you know, countless other stories. And so I think one of the things that I really recognize is that when I see an older person now, it's not, I look past gray hair or walk or all that. And I think, what do they have inside of them that I can dig into? And I do think one other aspect I learned, and this also relates to my water Tai Chi, is that intergenerational relationships are extremely important. They're good for everybody. And a new study came out this week that it is one of the major factors towards longevity is having intergenerational contact. And so I love that. And that's a good reminder to have friends who are all ages.
Great stories, Ellen. And I really recommend your book to all of our listeners. It's Gray Matters, Finding Meaning in the Stories of Later Life by Ellen Lem. Ellen, thanks so much. We really appreciate your time today.
Okay. It was really nice talking with you. Thank you.
That's all for this week's program. Take care, everybody. We'll see you next week at the same time. I'm Tom Lujack.
You've been listening to UWM Today with host Tom Lujack, the weekly program where you get to meet the people behind one of America's top research universities, University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Playing a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin, UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Learn more at uwm.edu.